You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast.
Good morning, or evening, or afternoon, whenever you may be. Welcome back to the first episode of Season 5 of the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast, where we talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts and aesthetics of setting up a setting, and telling stories born from it.
That's right.
Now, if you're a regular listener, you might have noticed that we haven't introduced ourselves, because today I want to try out something new. Maybe just for today, probably not moving forward, but today I want to try introducing each other in case people are not quite sure who we are or have forgotten who we are, or are coming for the first time and don't have any idea who we might be. So I'll introduce you first, if that's all right with you.
Oh, cool? Go ahead, my friend.
And here I am, like, posing in front of the webcam, trying to get myself hyped up, as if you guys can see this. It doesn't, it's just for me.
It's
this
all
is all for me.
I feel very special.
That's true, too. Okay, so on this podcast, we feature none other than artist, singer, short story writer, theater performer, and the mastermind behind every logo we've had on the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast. Please welcome back one of the two co-hosts of this podcast. It's Merlo.
Hey, it's
welcome
me.
Welcome back.
Merlo. Welcome. Wait, friends, what? And strangers. It's me. I'm also here.
Okay, cool.
I will totally do the same thing for you. Round off this beautifully organized and structured segment.
Yeah, this is why I went first.
Because with me, you've heard his voice before. Perhaps you've never heard him introduced by me. It's Dante, the wonderful Dante, who is very busy, usually, just like me, running an amazing YouTube channel, started with D&D, branching out into literally 99 other games, which is a wild thing. Wintry D&D, go look it up. Am I saying that right? Or is it Wintry RPG now?
One of the two. Depends
You'll
on what
platform
it. You're looking at.
It has amazing, very cute dragon art as well, or wyvern art, I should say.
Thank you.
That is absolutely the most adorable and that I look back at way too often. And he's also my co-host. It's great. Woo. We're playing D&D. We're playing other games. We're doing all the things. And for the uninitiated, good to know as well, is that we're currently 6 hours apart.
That's exactly true.
Because you are from the States.
I live in New York City, New York.
And I don't.
You live all...
I'm very much
all
not,
the way where?
I'm all the way in Holland, you guys. It's the Netherlands. Yes. It's across an ocean.
So every week we choose to meet up somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean to talk about all the things we love about world building and storytelling. It's a hobby that has blossomed into a 50 episode podcast where we have covered, and let me see if I can do the math right, we've covered close to 90 different topics over the last 50 episodes.
Yeah.
Because seasons 1 to 4.
Yeah, we started off
two
like
topics each.
To an episode. And then we did some self-care and then we scaled it back to one per episode.
We realized we should love ourselves and we cover only one topic every episode, but not any less content, honestly. We just go in more in depth depending on the topic we choose.
Yeah, so we got some nuance in there.
Exactly. So before we talk about the topic that we're going to talk about today, which you guys are already seeing in the title, but we haven't mentioned yet, so there's a little bit of an element of surprise.
Wait, I never thought about that before, because I don't know this one. You're going to introduce it, and you guys already know it, and I'm literally the only one left out at this point.
Part of the fun of this podcast is that one of us picks a topic each episode, and we alternate, and the other person doesn't know what we're talking about until we start talking about it. But you guys know, because you could just look at the title. But before we get into that, I wanted to preface that if my voice sounds a little bit raspy or strained today, it's because I made the brilliant decision to stream yesterday for an hour and a half, covering, I believe, Project Black Flag last night.
Lovely.
And about 30 minutes into this 90-minute podcast, I realized I forgot my water downstairs. And not wanting to lose that viewer engagement by disappearing for a minute and coming back.
Streaming momentum. Yeah.
I made the conscious choice of, hey, I can just go without water.
I will refuse water
for another hour straight. So if you guys can find the VOD of Black Flag Playtest number 2 on my channel, you'll notice that my voice is increasingly becoming more difficult to hear.
Oh, man.
As I'm truly just like scratching the words out of my mouth towards the end of the stream.
I hate that visual. Do you have water right now? Please say yes.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Because we will wait for lesson. It, you know, like don't kill your vocal cords because
it's
of
true.
It.
We do edit this in post. So.
Yes.
But that's that. Any updates with you? It's been a strong month before anybody's heard from us.
Yeah, that's right.
Has anything happened?
Well, in terms of vocal cords, I had very raspy vocal cords last Friday when we hung out when we did the most amazing game we've ever played. Side note.
This is fair.
Because the day before I had a wild karaoke night with my musical theater nerd friends, which was lovely.
Yeah.
And which I wanted to not stop. So I just sang until people left. Which was great.
Which I've said before, I'm endlessly envious of that Marilla just has a group of supremely talented friends.
Isn't it great?
From the theater who just go and sing together for karaoke.
I can't believe that this is part of my hobbies now, and I'm so happy about it. Because it's so good to do karaoke with equally nerdy musical nerds.
That's incredible.
It's the best people to do karaoke with, honestly.
Whoever has the room next to you guys whenever you guys are karaokeing must be like, envious.
Yes.
Of what's coming through the walls. Anything else from you? Actually, we could bring that up. By the time this comes out, it might be released to the public. The game that we've been playing for the past month and been very thoroughly obsessed with is called Tangled Blessings by Cassie Mothwin.
Yeah.
It is a two-player TTRPG with no dice.
Tabletop roleplay game. Yes.
No mechanical combat. It is simply just prompts for you to build a story out of. And we're playing as two rival magicians at a grad school magical academy.
And we
hate each other and we love each other. And it's a fantastic story of whatever we're cooking, because we've truly stripped away all the things that we don't enjoy quite as much as storytelling and role playing and building character. And it's the most indulgent thing that we've
ever done. You know, who would have thought that two people doing a podcast about prompting and world building would enjoy a game about prompting and world building?
Yeah.
Yep, very much so.
As both of us who've played D&D together for 4 years now.
Yeah. Right.
It was truly the most ridiculous thing for us to realize that, hey, maybe 15 hours of character building and interaction is is way different from rolling dice and killing goblins.
Yeah.
And it's been its own special pleasure, and I've been really enjoying it. So is out by the time this episode drops. Yeah.
Also, you covered this on your channel, right? You did a stream about it.
Sure did.
With the author of the game.
Yes, I was with Cassie Mothwin to explain this, and we've been playing through the demo of the game. But hopefully by the end of April, I think, whenever this comes out, I might be dating this podcast, which won't be relevant literally in 2 months from now. If the game is out, you should pick it up. I am not sponsored. I just truly enjoy
it. It's just amazing.
Much.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Anything else before we jump into this?
Well, how are you? Usually we also just say, hey, how are you doing?
Oh, that's true. I'm doing okay. I guess the big thing that happened recently is that I was at PAX East, which is very exciting. PAX East is a convention that's hosted in Boston. Got to visit our D&D friends who live in Boston, which was very fun. And I got to walk around and check out some other games. I got roped. Sometimes they just kind of grab you and like, hey, play our game. And you just sit there for like 30 minutes. And that happened. And the person that did that to me just taught me the game, bodied me in like 5 minutes, and then I left. And that was the whole experience.
Beautiful.
It was fun, but I got absolutely demolished. And I got to talk to the folks at Indie Press Revolution, who host a whole booth of indie games that you can normally find only online through PDF. And I got to see all the physical versions of them.
That's
cool. They were so nice. There's a game called Thousand Year Old Vampire that is beautiful in PDF, but like a work of art in person. And I got to enjoy reading that and just looking at it because my wallet couldn't handle buying it. But everybody who can see that, who can find that game online, worth a read. Worth a read.
Amazing. That sounds like a great place. I honestly didn't really know what it was, except for that you guys keep saying you gotta visit when PAX is there.
Right.
And I sort of ended my stream of thought about it there.
It's like a video game slash board game slash tech convention of things that are upcoming, so to speak.
Yeah, that's great.
And with that, we should probably start talking about the thing we talk about on this podcast. Mm. That makes sense, right?
Sure.
Again, every week we bring one topic to the table. I know what it is this time, but Marilla doesn't. And the next time week we'll alternate. And then after, we'll close the episode with a prompt where I'll toss a prompt to Marilla and using, I guess, what we learned from the episode. Do we usually tie it back into the topic, or is it usually a little more random?
I mean, it kind of happens.
Yeah, sometimes.
It feels so logical in your brain when you prep something like that.
Yeah. And Marilla's got to improvise something at the end. So stay tuned for that. Today, unfortunately, I was trying to boil this down to a one-word title, as I usually try to. Like, boil the topic down to like one word so it fits nicely in the title of whatever the podcast episode is. But today...
I love how I never think about this in my life and let you do all the work whenever I prep.
every time you bring a topic, I'm like, okay, what is that in one word? What is that in one
Sorry.
Word?
It's not I never realized. Perfect. Yeah, I guess that's part of the deal.
Actually, season one, we had a whole lot of longer titles, so to speak.
That's right.
So I'm going to hearken back to celebrate episode 51 of this podcast. I'm going to talk about something that we touched on episodes 1 and 2, which is very exciting to come back to. And the topic is leaving an impact.
Ooh.
Leaving an impact.
Dang. Okay.
So on this podcast, we talk about a whole lot of setting building. We want to build a setting for our world, whether that be a city, a country, a village, or the entire world and mythos. And it can be on a grand scale. But how we tie that world building into storytelling, or at least one of the many woven lines that connect the two ideas, is the concept of change, where the onus of a story is how things change, so to speak. Mm. So there's kind of a catalyst, something that brings a story forward, how that catalyst is addressed, and how everything is left in its wake in post. So today, I want to focus on what it looks like when the main characters of a story, whether this be a TTRPG or some sort of written story, how the main characters of a story leave an impact on the setting, and how that meaningful change teaches us about the world in past, present, and future. That's the topic.
Okay, yes. I like that. I like that a lot.
I wanted to be like, oh, the topic is impact, but that's kind of, I'll workshop in it. I don't have to think about the title for like weeks because we're pre-recording this. So we'll think about that later. We can start with the very basics and look into the past first. One of the things that I keep remembering you bringing up was this scene in the show The Last Airbender, where they're walking through a desert and you can see the visible impact of war deep into the background of the scene. Without anybody bringing it up, you can see the remnants of like armies and tanks and ruinous buildings. And that is a change to the setting that happened in the past that informs us of how this place has changed before the adventurers got there. But for me, when I'm running any sort of TTRPG, when I'm running any sort of campaign, and I bring my players to a place, whether that be a tavern or a city or a village, one of my first questions to myself is, what here is available and ready for the adventurers to change it? And that's kind of like my leading question, to make sure that the world is an interactable piece of whatever story they're trying to tell. And usually I try to gear that towards things that are like diametrically opposed to their beliefs or how they believe this place should be. If I bring up something that is oppressive or dangerous or morally corrupt, so to speak, that's always a very easy thing for them to be like, hey, that's wrong. Maybe we can do something about that. But also, it's part of making the world feel lived in when players can see that what they do leads to a tangible, palpable change. And the more visual it is, the more I personally enjoy it. Maybe to toss it to you, if you have any thoughts on this, do you know of any examples of a setting that has clearly been influenced by someone who passed through or something in the past that has shaped it? We literally even talked about a setting that constantly changes in episode, I believe it was 48. The one where we're talking about the city that is slowly, where the water level is slowly rising.
Yeah, one of the recent ones, yeah.
So that's one of the dynamic settings where things slowly change over time. Do you have any examples of that or things that stick out to you when talking about a setting that has had something impact them?
There's so many thoughts already that I think connect super well to this thing. Immediately, my brain went to the, like, you have this weird YouTube niche that's just amazing of people just building the most detailed miniatures about, like, settings from animated films or something. I watched a video about this morning. This one was the casita from the Encanto movie, and somebody remade it in, like, dollhouse size.
Wow.
And it was beautiful and lovely and art and also very great to just see as a time lapse for, like, half an hour. I was just sort of glued to the screen. And it reminded me of it because in miniature painting and stuff, or painting in general, maybe, there's this thing. It's almost this talk about something being retro or being vintage, right? If you make something from scratch, it will become more real if you make it look like it's old.
Oh.
It starts to feel more realistic once you dab some tissue paper on your paint so that it looks like it's imperfect. Like it had some wear and tear. Or when people say, oh, that house is so characteristic, because you see time sort of being represented in either old elements on the window pane or something, or you see that the house is a little bit janky, or that the tiles that are used are a bit old, or the color is sort of started to chip away a little bit, I don't know, stuff like that. And somehow we love it more when it's old or when it's lived in. Yeah. It's kind of the same thing what you're talking about. When you see the impact or the fact that time has had an effect on it, I think somehow we connect more to it, or we realize that it is its own place that had its own history.
Right, right.
I remember going to Berlin in Germany. Of course, Berlin has had like a wild history in itself because of World War II.
Of course, of course.
But you would literally see in the street right across the asphalt of like a big road or something, you would see like little bricks representing where the Berlin Wall would first stand. So instead of filling it with asphalt, they purposefully decided to make it more visible, more like a scar, basically, by using bricks instead of wanting to perfectly pretend like it didn't exist. So the sort of imperfections there, the fact that we see that something has happened that we weren't here for, is very relevant, I think, to this whole thing that you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I guess we sort of have to define then what is static to us but was changed before. So, you know, if I, as the main character, come into a new town, as you described, I see perhaps, I don't know, the city hall, and then one side of it is completely like blown off or something, or it's like half ruinous on one side. We see something has happened, but I have nothing to do with it. So what does that bring me to a store? I guess that brings mystery. It brings this idea of time has passed before I was here.
Yeah.
This has a history by itself. But then on the other hand, you also want to have stuff in your story, exactly what you were saying, that is clean, perhaps, or that is ready for change by me, right? By the main character.
Right, right.
Because that's how the main character leaves an impact and how we can connect it to feeling for the main character instead of just understanding the grandness of history that passed through here before or something.
Of course.
It's two different things. And it also reminds me a lot of stories that are told in like ruins and stuff. I'm not sure if we ever discussed this one, but one animated show, Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts.
I don't think we have.
I think it's on Netflix. I really hear no one speak about it, but it's really, really good. And it's basically a world, if I remember correctly, because it's been a while since I've watched it. But a lot of the world building is basically traces of wars and chaos that happened before. And our main character is kind of finding kind of apocalypse kind of style, right? Of finding old places and making them their own, or seeing how the world has sort of reshaped in these ruins that were the old world. It gives it a lot of depth. I really love that about it.
Yeah, there is such a level of intrigue that you can pull by making settings that have, one, already been changed to the point of the people reading it wonder what led to that. Like, your example is fantastic of simply presenting them with a building that's already half destroyed. Like, I don't know anybody who wouldn't ask what happened there. You know, it's a perfect pull.
Perfect adventure pull. Hook. Yeah.
And then you think about all the things that adventurers do and how much they leave in, like, ruins. Like, you know, there's a common joke where like the town that adventurers visit is never better after they leave. And the adventurers get to continue their heroic quest somewhere else, but you never talk about the cleaning crews of a superhero fight, right?
Whatever's
you never
left talk in about its wake. Yeah,
the millions of dollars of buildings that have been knocked down in this punch out, right?
Yeah,
you know. And it's so good when you bring people back to somewhere they visited before and someone tells them, oh, yeah, we're still working on that. And that building is in like a state of repair, or you can see people who have like visible scars or marks from some arcane happenings and people getting used to these changes. It's such a fun feeling.
Yeah. And I think it's also about connection, right? Because if you have a building that's perfect on its own, or that seems very, yeah, I guess just disconnected from the world, as in nothing has happened to it, or it is its own little piece of landmark that has been untouched or something. Two things about that. One, if it's in a world that is changed and touched and steeped in time and history, that's going to be very strange because it's totally like out of tune with the rest of the world. And two, if you world build without it having impact or having been impacted by other things in the same world, then your world is not really the same world. It's two different places. If you want to say this village is here and this village is there, you can say that. But if you don't build the road, or if you don't build the relationship two villages have next to each other, they're not going to be connected.
And as we're talking about ways to kind of make your setting more interactable, the more we talk, I think about like a phrase of like Lego blocks are made to be knocked down or so, something like that. Like the whole reason for building things up is like a whole stack of dominoes is to eventually knock it down, right? The more things in your world that are interfaceable that players can touch gives them more to play with and more things to change and more ways to pull the story in a direction that they want, gives them more agency in affecting where they go as players. Just to bring up examples, a fantastic way that all of us are very familiar with in terms of people who have run games for people. The best way for your push to players in a direction that is interesting and engaging and unique is to put someone in front of them that is diametrically opposed to what they believe in. That is just truly like, hey, no causing trouble, no messing with the with the royalty. Do not go to the castle and cause trouble. Do not go to the prisons and break anybody out. This is truly a place ruled by the soldiers and the army, and you will come through, make no change, and leave. And there's something about that in the deep yep. wiring of the player's mind that says, hey, we gotta do something about this, right?
Yes.
We have to change this.
Also, if we're introducing a little bit, we talk a lot about Dungeons & Dragons, D&D, and RPG.
Sure, yes.
But in general, you know, this can be applied to all world building, all storytelling. Everything's connected. But in D&D, usually you have a player and you have the character that they play, and then you have the world that they are playing in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I guess we use them a lot interchangeably, but definitely, you know, if you are a player, you can sort of substitute that as well for being an author, right? So just wanted to put that out there.
Yes, yes, yes. In terms of TTRPGs, for people who aren't familiar, most games have something called a game master, where someone's in charge of running the setting and building the sandbox that the other players can roam around in with their characters.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the perspective on this. But yeah, and this is kind of a bad habit, that I like making sure that my world speaks of the path that the adventurers took through it. So every city that they pass through, I almost refuse to let them leave until something has visibly changed.
Interesting.
And the bad habit that my players that always remind me of is that it's usually by fire. Usually by some...
Oh, wait, I feel like we talked about this. Didn't we have a fire episode? I think it was episode. Pirates and Fire episode.
Yeah, basically fire brings change, fire brings progress, fire brings ruin. Fire brings dynamic movement.
Yes.
Good, bad, or otherwise, most cities that my adventurers go to often leave with fire behind them, illuminating their
backs. It's a good visual, you know, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I would recommend against, you know, burning all of your world down.
Every
if
single,
you can,
yeah.
But, you know, if it's your way, we might have stopped you, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just something you really got to think about when you are making this world that people are going to interact with. It's kind of a big picture thing. When you're planning out what your story is going to be, you have to make sure that most things in your story are not ironclad. There are going to be obviously foundational concepts and ideas and structures in your building that are unchanging and important because they're unchanging. But everything around it should be like things you can pull off of a toy shelf that players can look to, find interest in, and do whatever they want to. And that's how you create a world filled with memories, or remember how we did this, or remember how we changed that, or this place was different last time I was here. This is how you add weight to the things that players experience by reminding them that they are the onus of change and they are the ones leaving an impact. And the story that they tell relies on what they change, how much they change, and why they changed it.
Mm.
And that's kind of the cornerstone of what I wanted to talk about today.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I really love that summary as well. The question of, you know, what should be static in your world is an interesting one here.
Mm-hmm.
If you world build without any rules, usually I like some very basic or very abstract ground rules there, right? But
yeah,
on the other hand, the more rules you have, I remember talking to my tutor because I'm doing a master's in illustration.
Yes.
And she brought up something very interesting where she said the more rigid your structure or your corset for whatever it is that you're doing is,
mm-hmm.
the more shocking it will be once you get out of it, once you break it.
Wow, that's deeply...
That's good, right?
connected to what we're talking about. I love that.
I just realized, yeah. And it's really lovely because she talked about it in Shakespearean specific sonnet writing and stuff where you have quite rigid, you know, rules of rhyme or rules of how many verses go before you change up your rhyme scheme or something like that. I'm not super familiar. Because Shakespeare has a specific way of sonnet writing, he can talk about the most abstract stuff like living or dying or love, the most vague thing ever. And because the structure is so rigid, the abstraction that happens within a rigid structure, there's a bigger contrast there than if you wouldn't have rules at all. The thing that happens when you world build is that you sort of establish a setting first, and yes. then you see either the change or you break it, and then, you know, you make the change, either you or, you know, your players or your characters, whoever.
Yeah.
That kind of got me thinking about what is the things that you want to be static? Static as in hard to change, or, you know, what you were saying, like a character that's diametrically opposed. And why should it be static? And what things are not static in the first place? It's kind of a balance, right? Because on the one hand, you want to have structure in order to make them understand where they are, because that's literally what establishing a setting kind of is, right? You know, you have these roads here and the people talk like this and all the houses are pink. That's sort of a rule set that you're building then, right? The sort of the way of living in this current place. And then the more rules you have or the more strict that is, once you set it on fire, the noble people that will not be used to anything and are very strict about it will be more shocked by the fire than the people that live in the slums have fires constantly. To sort of stay in the metaphor there.
Yeah. In that aspect, you add weight to things by putting a rigidity to them, making them resistant to change, makes it all the more impactful when they do change. Like things you believe to be core foundational ideas or concepts, if they change, the players or the people reading will be like, oh, everything is different now, right? Everything changes. If you think on a grand like mythos scale, if you manage to change something on like a world editing level, if that lever is pulled, something you believe to be absolute truth, if something changes there, like a god dies or the sky opens up, like things sure, like that,
yeah,
things you believed would never ever change, if that change is made, if that impact is left, everything feels so different. That's how you add weight to certain situations. You establish their rigidity and then abolish it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm,
but
for sure.
Yeah, that's all I had on that topic. I feel like that's a good primer for people to start thinking about how they can implement that in stories that they tell or how they actively world build and make sure that what they have is a setting that is dynamic and ever available to change. So
I love that. That's a great conversation. And it ties into so many things as well, right? That we usually talk about. It's there on so many levels.
Right, right.
Great first start of the season,
good
I would
first
say.
First start. I think,
amazing.
I think we're getting better at this. I think we're getting... again,
really?
If you want to, before we jump into our prompt, if you want to go back to any of our episodes and look to any of our topics that we've covered, there is no order to these episodes. Besides like our quiet like little life updates that might have some continuity. You can watch the episodes in any order you want, and every topic is relevant ad infinitum. Like whenever... it will not...
It's a growing arc. Archive what we're doing.
Yeah. So hop on to whatever episode you think catches your interest and enjoy whatever we've got already.
You want to hear more about Dante setting his city on fire? Go listen to the fire. It's a fire episode.
There's literally a fire episode. There's a fire episode. There's a world building
like
episode.
Season two or something? We'll figure it out.
I believe there's a ruins episode. There's a time episode. There's a whole lot of things we've already covered.
It's linking up, man. It's linking up.
Let's jump into our prompt for today. The prompt is something that Merla hasn't heard yet, but we'll have to improvise. And it is deeply relevant to our topic. So are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be. Let's go.
Okay. Here is your prompt for today.
Drum roll.
The adventurers have come and gone. Name three things that have changed about the village. And let it be known, you don't have to explain how it happened.
I just have to name the changes. That's the prompt.
You just have to name the changes. And, and how it happened will be in our collective imagination.
Interesting. Okay. I feel like for this to make sense, there's got to be some world building to this, right? Okay. Here it goes. This is the context of this.
Sure.
This village is a small village. Pretty small. On the edge of, I would say, a district or something that has a large metropole. And this is like not the metropole.
Sure.
This is the other city also in the same district that no one ever goes to. All the tourists go to the big one, go to the capital. This one's on the edge of a forest. It's a little bit higher up in the mountains. People usually go here for recreation, I would say, rather than like any specific work. There's a lot of like woods around that are very pretty. There's like one train that stops every 2 days or something here, and that's it.
Fantastic.
As the adventurers kind of storm through in a, you know, from outside perspective, strange whirlwind of things that they're doing. They're either chasing someone, you know, they're clearing out the entire shop for like random items that no one ever needs. They've been in the shop for like years and years collecting dust, and suddenly these people clear them all out. It's very confusing.
Sure.
Also, the baker has needed to work like double hours to be able to keep up with the food that they're consuming here. It's a wild ride. People are very confused about the excitement suddenly happening in this nice, sleepy little woodsy town. Mm-hmm. And before they know it, they're gone too. People have been talking about like, have you seen the new ones? And then they're already left somehow. No one knows what they're up to, where they're going. I guess one of the, what's this called when your job is to look after a forest? What's that in English? Like woodsman?
Woodsman?
No.
Park ranger?
Park ranger. Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. The park ranger of the town. The one dude checking out the forest
right.
Every day.
It doesn't feel right.
No? Problem. What I is mean, it? Woodsman?
No, that's fine. That's fine. You can go with park ranger. Because I feel like a village doesn't call the forest near them a park, you know? Maybe it's just the ranger.
Okay.
It might just be the ranger.
Okay, this is probably then just like a woodsman just living even more remote than the rest of the people.
Sure.
If you need to know anything about the woods, you got to go to Mr.
The Woodsman.
Larry over here.
Larry the Woodsman, okay.
Larry's doing his daily rounds, you know, making his way through the woods. And suddenly he notices a giant, quite literally as large as a roundabout, a giant footprint stamped into the ground.
Okay.
This big a footprint is not usual for these areas. There's maybe bears and boars and foxes and stuff that live here, but that's about it. You know, a bear is a pretty big deal around here, and this is not a bear. There's like three bears that could fit into the size of this thing.
Loving it.
He's very confused about it. At first, he's like, should I share this with the other people? And then he's like, nah, they'll freak out. They'll either blame me for something. He's like, no, this goes with me to the grave. And he never talks about it again. Meanwhile.
Okay. Meanwhile,
someone new arrives at this town through the train station. Someone who's coming to their grandma who lives here and is needing a good breath of fresh air.
Perfect.
After a wild life in the city. Grandma's waiting for them, very happy. They hug and stuff. And he's like, hey, did you notice that the announcements in the train are like in reverse? I'm not sure if this is like the thing that usually happens here, but somehow there's like, I couldn't really understand what stop I should take. I mean, I saw you on the platform, but... And she's like, no, that's not... Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. never... No, that's not a thing. Ever since this first young man who's coming to stay with his grandma noticed it, once he left after the summer, still in reverse, the train conductor has not been able to fix this at all, even though he knows the machinery. It's very confusing. Perhaps there's like some magic involved, but it's not something that someone would spend like hours on doing. Who would benefit from this, right? It's very strange. But, you know, I guess people have just started to learn to understand what stop they're at and stuff. You know, it's kind of sorting itself out. There's one more thing, I would say the most positive and impactful change that these hungry adventurers have brought is that ever since they've totally robbed the bakery of all their goods, the bakery was forced to be very creative in their new products and produce because once you eat all the normal cookies, you know, I only have these, I don't know, what goes in cookies? I only have raisins left.
Where are you going with this?
Cookies with raisins? I don't know. Is that, I never really tried it. Yeah. Do we have other flavors that we still have left in the pantry? Because the new stuff's not going to come in for a week. So they're making like a lot of new flavored cookies now. And the adventurers have been like the first people to try them out.
Amazing.
And so the bakery, how do you say that? The bakery's inventory has expanded greatly by the influence of these lovely,
amazing,
confusing strangers. And I guess no one really knows what happened in the forest or in the train.
That's stellar.
End of prompt. Did I do it right?
That's so great.
I'm not sure.
No, that was good. You sold me. Deeply disconnected
yes.
things, or
that
are
was
they,
my only
right?
job.
Or are they? The words reversing on the train gives me such rascal wizard energy, where it's like they were riding the train in, yeah. And one of the adventurers was like, "How funny would it be if I switched the words around, like on a whim? There's no reason to it.
Yeah,
it's
just, for sure. This is pure maybe, like
to see if I can
power boredom that's happening here.
Yeah, power boredom. That's a fantastic way to put it.
Yeah.
Change for the sake of change.
There will be like some person that's going to ride this entire train and be like, it's a fucking code for something. I'm the only one who notices that there's something really wrong with the world. There's something going on and no one realizes but me. And then a wizard out there is like forgetting that he ever did this for years. Yeah, that's definitely exactly what's happening here. Yeah. Also, it reminded me so much of the Welcome to Nightville podcast. I don't know if you know it, but it's a big recommend. It's like a guy doing like the weather / news report for a fictional town called Nightvale. And there's a lot of like weird things happening in Nightvale, but the news reporter doesn't find them very weird. So he's like, oh, the clouds have been purple today. Make sure to check them out if you get a chance. Anyway, back to the news.
Awesome. I love that. Okay. And with that concludes our first episode of season 5. That's real exciting.
It happened.
Oh my gosh.
Beautiful.
Tune in next week. Well, whenever this drops. Tune in next week for Merla's topic as we do a lot of the same and visit what we love about world building and storytelling and how we can improve those stories to be as dynamic and wonderful and ever-changing as possible. But as you do, there's something that you should probably remember.
Oh, really? What's that?
Yeah, you should always remember that your rivers are wrong.
Oh, I guess I'll go like check them out or something.
Yeah, you should probably go check that out. Yeah, we'll sort that out sometime. Maybe next episode.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway,
tune in for more.
Tune in to see updates on that. Goodbye.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have ideas for topics, prompts, or you just want to share your thoughts, please reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to Maarten Schellekens, who created the intro and outro music for our podcast. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to see you at the next one. Bye.